From the heartland of America and the gateway to the West, good morning, good evening, wherever you may be across the nation, around the world. I'm George Norrie, and welcome to Coast AM. Later tonight, Past Lives and Souls. Here's what's happening. Unbelievable weather in the Midwest over the weekend. Dozens of tornadoes, as you know by now, and intense thunderstorms swept across the Midwest on Sunday, unleashing powerful winds that flattened entire neighborhoods, flipping over cars, uprooting trees, leaving at least 8 people dead, 6 in Illinois, 2 reportedly in Michigan. Illinois, of course, took the brunt of the fury as the string of unusually powerful late-season tornadoes tore across the state, injuring dozens, even prompting officials at Chicago's Soldier Field to evacuate the stands and delay the Bears game. One town, Washington, Illinois, 400 homes flattened. Let's check in with Earth Change Media's Mitch Batras. Mitch, of course, very unusual November to have this kind of severe weather. What happened? How did it start?
Well, it is unusual. And whenever I hear this kind of thing happening in the Midwest, George, I always think of your family. Is everybody okay?
Everybody's okay. Look, we are okay. We experienced very high winds, but not anything like the poor people in Illinois faced, Mitch.
Yeah, it was bad. The report I have says that there were 101 report warnings that were issued, and 81 tornadoes sighted, 358 reports that were sent in. The winds went up to 190 miles per hour, making it an F4. What I believe is behind this, George, is the sun.
Yeah, you're right.
And now here's a quote, George. I think other people are catching on as well. I'm reading this. The cause was reported as, quote, an unusual shift of the jet stream causing an unstable atmosphere. This comes from Bill Bunting of the National Weather Service, said it was not until Saturday that the atmospheric instability came into focus. So this was pretty sudden. It's something that happens pretty quick.
Well, you know, though, Mitch, in spite of all this, we haven't had the hurricane season that they predicted last year. How come? We've had rough weather, typhoons in the Philippines, these tornadoes in the Midwest here in November, but where are the hurricanes?
Well, I think it's all timing. The peak period of the hurricanes basically has come and passed, except for the horrific events that are occurring further north in the hemisphere. But the solar events, I think, play a huge part in this. Just recently, that the X-class flares have started up, just in the last 3 weeks or so. Between November 9th and November 13th, 5 X-class flares were released from the sun, some of which were Earth-directed. And it takes between 48 and 72 hours for those events to hit our magnetic field. I think that timing fits with November 17th, what we're talking about tonight, November 17th events with all these tornadoes and disruption, and definitions like unusual shift of jet stream. I think it has strong plausibility of a sun-Earth connection.
I think you're onto something there, Mitch. Thank you so much. Mitch's website, earthchangesmedia.com. 2 workers have died and 20 others injured after a mining accident in southwestern Colorado. The authorities have confirmed that the 2 miners died of carbon monoxide poisoning. The source of the gas still under investigation there. Well, if you got a little baby, listen to this story. Tablets and toddlers. It's a warning for parents of tech-savvy children. That's right. The American Academy of Pediatrics says children under 2 should avoid all screen time. Doctors and therapists fear that too much time on touchscreens could cause some long-term damage to your baby. NASA's MAVEN mission has set off for Mars. This is exciting. The orbiter was launched on an Atlas V rocket from Florida's Cape Canaveral. Assuming the $671 million mission stays on track, the probe will have a 10-month cruise to the red planet. MAVEN is going to study Mars's high atmosphere to try to understand the processes that have robbed the world there of its atmosphere. Check in with Robert Zubrin, the expert on Mars. This is an exciting mission, Robert.
Yeah, it sure is. It's a mystery as to how Mars lost its early atmosphere. Mars was clearly once a warm and wet planet. We can see the water erosion features all over its surface, but it's cold and dry today.
Well, it sure is. And Robert, you know, it's going to take about 10 minutes to do this, but how can they ascertain what happened to Mars with a probe like this?
Well, it's going to be tough, frankly. What they're looking at is the rates of erosion of the Martian atmosphere by the solar wind. Charged particles come streaming out from the sun all the time. That's called the solar wind. And they don't do much to the Earth because the Earth has a strong magnetic field and it shoves the solar wind away. But Mars does not have much of a magnetic field, and the solar wind could hit its atmosphere and erode it. I personally do not believe that most of Mars's atmosphere was lost through the solar wind. I think that most of Mars's atmosphere is still in the soil of Mars. That is, because the planet did not have plate tectonics when it rained, the carbon dioxide dissolved into the water, and then it just got turned into minerals in the ground, and it thinned out the atmosphere that way, and then the planet got colder because it had less CO2 in its atmosphere, and then it became cold and dry. But the good news is that if that's true, we can get that CO2 out again and warm the planet up someday.
Well, we're going to watch this mission. Robert, thank you so much. In a moment, actress, author, activist Shirley MacLaine joins me. Her latest work, What If? A lifetime of questions, speculations, reasonable guesses, and a few things I know for sure. Shirley's next with us on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast. I'm George Norrie, Oscar winner, 3-time Emmy winner, and 10-time Golden Globe winner. Shirley MacLaine has appeared in, well, more than 50 films, been nominated for an Academy Award 6 times, received the Oscar for Best Actress back in 1984. She's been an advocate for civil rights and liberties, women's rights, of course, spiritual understanding. Listen to this. She has sold more than 20 million copies of her international bestsellers, and she's with us tonight as we talk about her latest work called What If? A lifetime of questions, speculations, reasonable guesses, and a few things I know for sure. Welcome to Coast again, Shirley MacLaine. Hi, Shirley. How are you?
Oh, George, I'm terrific. May I just say how much I admire you, all your work over the years, and I love you on history, too.
Oh, thank you, Shirley. Now, you're way out there in the hinterlands of mountains, I hear.
I'm 8,000 feet in northern New Mexico. We hardly have internet and absolutely no work ethic.
Did you see a UFO when you were out there?
Oh, I've seen many of them. Of course, this is the backyard of UFOs. But I have to say, as much as I've written about them and speculated, and you know that, we've discussed it, yeah. Whenever I am away from whatever house I live in, and I have friends staying there, that's when they appear, when I'm gone and my friends are here.
Well, there's lots to talk with you about, Shirley. I just love the fact that you're involved in everything that we do on this program. Before we really get going, here's a question I've wanted to ask you for years. You are an honorary member of the Rat Pack. I mean, the group of guys that I just love. Sinatra, Dean Martin, Sammy Davis Jr., Joey Bishop. How did you become the honorary member? How did that happen?
Well, remember, we did a lot of pictures together, and during the course of action of working, you learn to trust someone or not. And we just developed a relationship of being able to depend on one another. I think our senses of humor were similar. And there was never any kind of social sexual drive there. None. I was like their little mascot. They had to protect from having me.
you were like the sister, Shirley, weren't you?
Yeah, and I was like the one who cleaned up their crackers and their jelly beans and the things that they Sorry, George, I've got a cold.
Oh, that's okay. You hang in there as long as you can, okay?
Yeah. No, but they were wonderful, and what was really the best thing about them was how spontaneous in life and with their creativity they were. They had a kind of a sense of letting the audience share with their mistakes or whatever trouble they got in, or what they decided to do, and they really didn't know how. You know, whether it was singing or moving around, dancing or telling stories or whatever. And what I loved about it was the spontaneity. That really, I don't think we've seen that since, that group of people. I think everybody is too interested these days in being perfect. And
no,
they want
right.
to work out everything in a kind of a studio, and then they go before the public, but not these guys.
You're right, Shirley, and they just seem to have so much fun, and this is so great to have you on, especially, too, with Friday being the 50th anniversary of the assassination of JFK. You were very instrumental in civil rights and in pushing special rights on your own. And, you mm-hmm. know, to look at where we've come over 50 years, I think this country, Shirley, has lost a lot since the JFK assassination. I don't think we've ever gotten it back yet. What do you think?
Well, I think what has happened is there is an embedded sense of conspiracy that everybody kind of believes on some level now. I don't think we in this country really trust the government to tell us the truth. And we've certainly never agreed with the Warren Commission on JFK. So I think what's happened, we lost our sense of, I guess you would call it hope, which, you know, Obama was about to bring back for us. But that's a whole other story, what he's doing or why. But the JFK period, not just because he was handsome and romantic and funny and, you know, impressive around the world, but he really looked to me like he was going to change things. I think, by the way, George, that he was going to order via Majestic 12 a serious look and investigation at UFOs and whether they're flown or not.
We could only pray, Shirley. It's about time we get some information on that. And hence, of course, you've been fascinated with this all your life. How did that all start for you?
Well, I've been a mystic since I was 10. The first thing I really was conscious of asking for at Christmas was a telescope and a cross. Isn't that interesting?
Sure is.
I don't know what that's really about. But the telescope, I used to lie out on the lawn in Richmond, Virginia, and look up at the stars and know that there were other beings and other life out there. It's never, ever been a problem for me. I've just kind of grown with it as the years go by. And then I spent a lot of time, of course, in Peru and different countries in South America. Now, that's where I really saw all of the craft, because it looks like highways in the sky.
It sure does. I mean, you looked at those Nazca lines that Eric von Däniken has written so much about. And, I mean, you just shake your head. There's got to be no other reason that those people made those lines and made those figures but to, you know, pay homage to the gods or to show them something, huh?
Yeah, and I find it interesting, and I have a chapter on that in my new book, what Elohim means in the Old Testament. It's a plural word for gods. So as far as I'm concerned, all the study of craft and other beings is hidden in plain sight in Genesis. It's just right there. I suppose it depends on how the church wants to interpret it, but for me, it's very clear. So Elohim being plural, we will make man in our own image. Let's just move on to the pyramids and everything else from there.
You know, you've looked at so many things in your lifetime, and you know, the title of your book, What If? A Lifetime of Questions, Speculations. And have you come across that one question yet that you wish you could answer, Shirley, but you just haven't gotten the answer for it yet?
Yes. Why is cover-up so important? Who profits basically from that? And we should look at it. We should really have a little gander at, is this about who controls the power and the money on this planet? Is that why? You know, if there And we know there are other star nations from all over the cosmos.
Oh, my gosh. It could be billions of them.
Sure. And what kind of free energy are they experiencing that they can make these journeys? If we had the secret and some kind of trade-off with that free energy, look at where we'd be on the planet. People would be so much happier. But free energy is owned by those who own the world.
You know, I'm
off of my well, it's the military-industrial complex explanation, and I'm on to it's all about money.
Yeah, it's always been about money, of course. You know, there's a little part of the military complex in there. I thought years ago, Shirley, that maybe it was their fear of loss of control over us, or that we'd panic. I don't think that's the case. I don't think people would panic anymore. I think if we went out and polled most people, they'd probably say, I knew it all along. I knew we were being visited. They were holding back on us. I don't think people would be in shock. Do you?
No, I don't. But there is one thing that troubles me, and it's something that Stephen Hawking said to me a long time ago, and then it appeared in print and on television in the last couple of years, and that we were discussing UFOs and so forth. And he said, well, let's look at it this way. Remember what happened to the natives when the white man landed.
Good point.
And that's become the quote from Stephen Hawking. Now, what does he mean? And so I'm thinking, well, is every star nation out there that we are perhaps feeling and even witnessing, do they want the best for humanity?
And you know what? All you need is that one advanced civilization that does not, and we're in a heck of a mess. Because, you know, Hawking's few years ago warned us, be careful sending these probes out there and everything else. We don't want them to know where we came from. He was concerned about that.
He was concerned. And the reason, let me just explain why I knew Stephen was because we both had the same publisher. Otherwise, why would he be interested in me or anything like that? But we got to be friends because of a dinner or something that the publisher threw. And then whenever I was in London working or doing whatever, I would visit him at Cambridge. That was interesting. I'll tell you some of those stories. But the friendship of the two of us has endured over the years. And one of the things I wonder, although I never really asked him, was, Stephen, you're in your chair all day, and you've been there for, what, 35 years?
Yeah.
Are you really in that chair? Are you having journeys through the cosmos, learning things that the rest of us can only speculate? And I'm wondering if that's not what's going on.
Well, you may be right. I mean, he may have mastered out-of-body projections by being confined to that chair for so long.
Probably learn to do it, I don't know, maybe why that without even projection. I think it might be a natural tendency of his to, be a part of the all. He's told me many times, and he said it in public, he absolutely believes he's the reincarnation of Sir Isaac Newton. Did you know that?
No, I did not know that at all. That's amazing.
Yeah, and he said, and he was born 300 years to the day that Sir Isaac Newton died.
I love that.
And he holds the Newton chair at Cambridge.
And you know what? He may be the reincarnated Sir Isaac Newton.
Well, it certainly, as far as I'm concerned, not beyond my comprehension, obviously. But that also puts him into another realm of intellectual speculation. You know, Newton was very interested in all this stuff. And also were our founding fathers, Franklin and Washington and Jefferson. And, you know, they talked about what they called otherworldly, plurality of the world. That's what they called it.
They sure
and
did.
And they often wrote about it and speculated among themselves. So I often wondered, from that, what were the Masons really doing all these years? You know, George,
Stay with us, Shirley. We're going to take this quick break. Shirley MacLaine with us, the title of her book, of course. We're going to get into that. What if? And that's a pretty big what if. So we'll find out about that. Shirley's website, by the way, is linked up right there at coasttocoastam.com. I'm George Norrie. We'll be right back. And welcome back to Coast to Coast. Shirley MacLaine with us. Shirley, back in 1984, when you won the Academy Award for Terms of Endearment Best Actress, what was that like for you? Was that the one of those wow moments?
Oh, it is. It is truly a classically important moment in the actor's or any artist's life to be, awarded that stuff by the Academy, because it's absolutely honest. They know what they're talking about. And yes, as I said, I did deserve it. It was such a tough
you did.
It was difficult, but the script was wonderful. Jim Brooks is a genius. It was his first time out as a director, and he really did well. And I thank him forever for what he helped me with.
Well, good for you. Now, the title of the new book, What If? Tell me about the title.
Well, of course, most of my life I've been asking questions, and I think I ask more questions than I do breathing. But with all my questions, I wanted to put them down. What I did, I decided I wanted to write a book without my left-brained intelligence telling me what I should or shouldn't do. And every day, you know, I'm an ex-dancer, so I have real discipline, and I can do a regimen and make it work. Every day I would go on my portal here in New Mexico and sit with my trees and the animals around, because I have elk and bear and all sorts of animals. And I went into a kind of strange receptive state, I have to say, and I channeled this book. I just let whatever questions that I had, I threw them up to the universe, and whatever that universe is, wrote them down. That's what it felt like. Of course, I needed editing and all of that afterward, but it was a state of being that wasn't like like an intelligent, I must put this into linear thinking. It wasn't like that, and that's why it's come out this way. Did you read it, George?
I've read parts of it. I didn't get the whole book yet. They sent me chapters of it. So,
really?
Yeah, but at least I got some of it. That's the important thing. And it came out several months ago.
No, it didn't. It came out about 3 days ago.
They told me it was they told me it was out in February.
February?
Yeah, that's what they said. They said it was in the bookstores. Somebody said that they even saw it there.
I didn't even finish it until August.
That's amazing. Well, the write-up says...
Who told you that, for goodness sakes? That's ridiculous.
Yeah, it's in the write-up, but I'll send it to you.
It just came out. First publication date was Tuesday.
Well, no wonder I don't have the full book yet. You have to get that to me. That'll be good. Well, you know, when you were putting this together and, you know, answering some of these lifetime questions, I have found that people who are generally interested in the supernatural and the spiritual treat other people in a much better, nicer way. Do you find that to be the case?
Oh, yeah, because we do understand the science of karma. And you know, what you put out, you get back. I learned that a long time ago, but that's the kind of exercise you get with live performing, too.
Yeah.
The principle of what you put out comes back to you. I think it's with us in every moment of the day. So absolutely. I very much like the study of spiritual science.
Those of us who are spiritual, we're not necessarily religious, but we do believe in a higher power, and I'm sure that's you.
Absolutely, and you know, when you go through some of the questions and what seems to be going on, it's interesting that we're doing this during the time of the celebration of the conspiracy potential of JFK, because it makes you think of all the things that you really know that we don't have the explanation for. So the, I guess we have to look at what does feeling conspiratorial about anything really do to you? And in terms of a spiritual sense and in terms of a higher power. And you can really get worried and really get upset if the, let's say, the negative aspects of whatever you might be concerned about, if you go to that higher power, you're going to be okay. And that's what I am learning to do, because I love to uncover what is the real truth, not just what they want us to believe. And I think that there is this absolutely superlative, totally light. And I don't want to get into positive and negative, because so much of what's negative is teaching.
Right.
But the idea that the light itself is the source of everything, and inside that light, there is no dark. When I go right to that light, then I feel safe, I feel fine with whatever my conspiratorial conjectures might be. And I don't blame anybody for being conspiratorial about damn near anything these days.
No, you can't. I mean, you can't trust hardly anybody anymore. I mean, just about everything that government throws at us, Shirley, there's
well,
something forced to question.
But, yeah, and what's really interesting is why? What is this? I was hearing the person that on before in one of your commercials or whatever, and he was saying everything is about control. I'm not sure that, yes, it's about control, but I think it might be more about, I'm sorry, Jerry.
Oh, I know. We got to, hey, by the way, when you get better and heal up, we got to get you back for some more hours.
Yeah, I just came back from a whole book tour of about 22 interviews an hour.
You had too many people breathing on you, Shirley.
In New York. And so I'm, and by the way, I'm on a detox program, and I think that's what I'm doing.
Oh, that could be. Let's take some phone calls for you. That will ease your voice for a little bit here. And take some questions. Don in Omaha, Nebraska. Welcome to the program, Don. You're on with Shirley MacLaine. Go ahead.
Oh, hey, God bless you both. Can you hear me all right?
Yeah, I think she can hear you. She's over there.
Yeah, I can hear you.
Okay. Go ahead, Don.
I promise you I'm going to get a new phone soon, so you won't have to put up with this. But anyway, Shirley was in that wonderful movie, Being There, with Peter Sellers.
Mm-hmm.
And I read somewhere that they changed the ending from the way it was in the book, and they really added a zinger. And I wanted to ask her if she or anyone on the set at the time thought that, in a way, they might have been making something akin to a very long, very good Twilight Zone episode. Jack Warden played the president in that, in a couple of memorable Twilight Zones, too.
All right, we got to check in on you. Shirley, you okay?
No.
Okay. Look, you come back to the phone when you think you're all right. We're going to...
Uh-oh.
Just make sure she's okay. This is a live event with Shirley MacLaine, and she's got a massive coughing attack right here. So just
I'm sorry. I hope she feels better.
Yeah,
Should I let her go, or...
Well, you and I will chat for a little bit here, Donald.
Okay.
I mean, because it could have been a Twilight Zone. I think you're right. It had all the makings of that kind of feel. And, you know, when she was doing that, it could have been an expanded version of that. Did you see her in Terms of Endearment?
No, I was talking about Being There.
Did you see her movie, Terms of Endearment,
You know what? I saw that when I was so young. I'm sorry to say I didn't even know who she was.
<I'm sorry. laughs> Okay, good. Thanks, Don. Shirley, you back yet? You're okay?
Okay, I can't talk yet, no.
Okay. Wow, you really got hit there, didn't you? And I tell you what, Shirley, you want us just to let you go, and I'll just go to some open lines here for a while?
Okay, call me back in 15 minutes.
Okay, we'll do that. Shirley's having a heck of a time here, and we're going to let her go. We're going to go to the open line. So those of you on hold, if I can help you with the question, we'll do it. Let's go to Santa Fe, New Mexico. Jen, welcome to the program. Hey, Jen, thanks for calling.
Hi, George. Can you hear me?
I've got you, but we don't have Shirley. She just had a massive
coughing attack. I deserved. I'm sending her love and positive energy and empowerment.
We're
so
going to
have her voice because we want to hear her.
We're going to check back with her and see how she's feeling. That's a first for me. She really got hit.
Well, maybe it's just all the energy of you, the listeners, and Shirley. It's just a little too much.
Wow. Let's see. Well, she was coming down with a cold, like she said. She was on a book tour in New York.
She was probably pushing herself too hard.
Yep.
This is Marshall Clarfeld's daughter calling back again.
Oh, hi.
Isn't that funny? My question, I can ask it to you, but my question was going to be for Shirley. My thought was so many people have a kind of a fantasy about Shirley funding their spiritual vision. And I was going to ask Shirley, but now I'll ask you as well, what your fantasy for the whole world would be, like the best case scenario.
Oh, if I had a blank check, Jen, the right to make this world a better place, I would do, of course, what the utopian version would be, and that would be no wars, no famine, and we take care of people as much as we can, you know, homeless people and everybody else. But you know what? That's in a perfect world, and unfortunately, we don't have a perfect world, and I don't think we ever will. There's too much greed out there, don't you think?
I'm sorry, I had my phone alarm was ringing to tell me something. I didn't hear the very last part.
The radio gremlins are getting me today, aren't they? They are. But I said that we'll never have the perfect world, and that would be the ideal thing, but I don't think it'll ever happen.
Well, I'm a practitioner of Dolores Cannon's work, so... You know, she speaks about the new earth, and I'll tell you, when people come and work with me, they can't get the answers to all their questions because some of the things they're asking for, their infinite self, the source self or the God self tells them that you are going to get, you know, I've had people with no teeth in their mouth, and they're told that when the new earth is here, you'll regenerate your teeth very quickly. So, you know, they're all seeing this new earth where we are going to evolve beyond war and all the things that you envision. But the odd part is right now we're in the wild and woolly place in between. So I have faith in the new kids, you know, and the new kids on the planet, that some of them are coming in very conscious. So I'm excited about it.
All right. Well, good for you. I think we might have Shirley back here, so let's check in with her for a little bit. Shirley, you any better?
Yes, thank you, George. I'm better.
Okay,
I don't know. A real cold air came in my window. Let's hope that's what it was.
Look, first of all, you make sure you go and get taken care of tomorrow, okay?
I know I'm okay, but this detox is very interesting experience.
Oh, it sure is. Well, we've got a couple more calls here for you, Shirley. Let's go to Patrick in Santa Barbara. Go ahead, Patrick. Thanks for calling. Patrick, you there? Nope.
Yes, hello?
Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, oh, I'm so sorry. Thank you, George, and I love all your movies, Shirley.
Thank you.
One of my favorite actresses. There was a picture that I ran across of you on a movie set with Elvis Presley, and you were talking.
Yeah.
What did you guys talk about? I'm just really, really curious.
You know, he's one of the nicest guys I've ever met. I was about 23, and he was about 10. I don't know. We were both very young, and he was on the same lot that I was, Paramount. And we had dressing rooms right next to each other. We didn't do a picture together. We just ran into each other. I found him very, very respectful and nice and full of empathy. I liked him a lot and always have when I saw him much, much later in life.
Shirley, of everybody that you've worked with in your career, everybody you've worked with, which one, what actor had the most magic as far as you were concerned?
Well, on screen, I would have to say Nicholson.
Yeah.
Some of them, you know, I fell in love with a lot of my co-stars, George. I mean, come on.
It's the business. It's Hollywood, right?
Yeah, and when you're sitting waiting for the lights to get fixed and you're on the set being totally honest with each other, because that's what's required when you go to work to do expressing yourself all day, you fall in love with whoever you're talking with. And I can't think, there was only one man I couldn't bear, and that was Larry Harvey. He is gone a long time ago, but we did a picture in New Zealand, which I turned down Breakfast at Tiffany's for.
Wow.
And I think about 12 people saw it, so that didn't go over too well. But I didn't like him. Otherwise, everybody I've ever worked with, I really did like. That doesn't mean I had love relationships with them all. But
right.
Yeah,
right.
It's really a wonderful environment for friendship and for honesty, to tell you the truth.
Do you ever get back to Los Angeles often?
Oh, yeah. I have a place in Malibu. I love it there.
Yeah, that's
yeah. I love Malibu, and I love the high mountains here in New Mexico, both of them.
Terrence
Lucky
is there.
I could have both.
Let's go to Augusta, Kansas. Hey, Terrence, you're on with Shirley MacLaine. Go ahead.
Hi, how you doing? I appreciate you taking my call.
Sure,
I have two questions. First one, Ms. MacLaine, for years you've been criticized for the way that you think and the way that, basically thinking outside of the box, and it's unfortunate that us that do actually think outside of the box get criticized. What has helped you deal with that criticism that you've received over the years? And two, this is more of a personal note. When I was a small child, my parents took me to Prince Edward Island, Canada, and the people that lived there were Bertha and Wesley, and I believe their last name was Monroe, and you were related to them in some fashion. Is that a true or false deal or not?
Okay, almost out of time, Shirley. Grab the first one. I don't know. We're all subject to criticism when we think outside the box, aren't we?
I don't look at it as criticism. I look at it as limited thinking, and you should expand your own thoughts a little bit and use your imagination. So I've never looked at it as criticism. Therefore, I don't have to combat it. I just need to navigate through it in a way that could be helpful for others to grow. As far as Canada, my people are from in Acadia. They're from Nova Scotia. Wolfville, Nova Scotia, and their names were MacLaine, not Monroe.
Super. Well, Shirley, look, we're out of time. I want you to take care of that cold, would you? And let's.
I will do that, George. Thank you for being sympathetic to it.
Oh.
Of course, now I feel much better, and I could go on, but we'll do it another time then.
Okay, you got that right. Shirley MacLaine, of course, with us. Let's let her grab that voice and get better, and we'll be back in a moment on Coast to Coast AM.